Masechet Baba Masiyah Daf Lamed Tet. Yesterday we dealt with the case of someone who's taken captive and is reported to be dead. In that case, everybody agrees that the closest relative, who will be an heir, should descend upon the property and manage it. In the meantime, if it turns out that the report is true, then that person will inherit it. And if hopefully it's not true, the person comes back, at least there was someone there to take care of the land and to produce grain on it, fruit, whatever it produces, while the person is gone and doesn't just lie fallow. However, in a case where someone is taken captive but is not reported to be dead and presumed to be alive, then it was a machloket between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, we do not let anyone go onto the land. Person would rather just leave it. They're afraid that if you put someone there, then they're going to overwork it to get a quick profit. And therefore, just leave it fallow, wait till the owner comes back. But Shmuel, on the other hand, said that an heir should go and take care of it, since the heir will only receive the share of a sharecropper and is not going to take everything that it produces, and therefore will not overwork and will not ruin the land. And so that was the case of Moridin Karov Lenichse Shavui. That was a machloket. So do we allow a relative to descend and manage a property of a captive? Rav said no, Shmuel said yes, and now we're going to propose that this is parallel to a machloket Tanaim, Tanaehi Detanya. Hayored l'nichse shavui en mosiin oto miyado velo od ela afilu shama she memash meshinu ba'in vekadam v'talash v'achal hare ze zariz v'niskar velo en nichse shavuyin hare shaya aviv o achiv o echad min amorishin halchu lehem natayam v'shama'u behen shemet. The following, it's a long braita, it's going to have three categories. The first one is shavuyin. The law first gives us the law, then it tells us, then it defines what it means by shivuyin. So the halakha is that a relative does descend and manage the property of someone taken captive. If he descends, rather, then we do not remove the property from him. And not only that, even if he hears that his relative is freed and is on the way home, he's approaching, he's arriving, and the relative who's managing it quickly goes and harvests as much as he can and consumes that produce, he is, because of his zealousy and diligence, he will profit. He can take anything that he gets his hands on before his captured relative actually comes back, he keeps. Now, what is the definition of shivuyin? If his father or brother or anyone that he would inherit go away on a trip and there's a rumor that the person died. And so here, as we said before, Rav and Shmuel agree that when there's a rumor that the person died, then the relative can go and be on the land. All right, that's category one. Hayored l'nichse netushim osin oto miyado. Ve'elu hen nichse netushin. Hare shaya aviv o achiv o echad min amorishin halchu lehem dat hayam. Ve'lo shamo behen shemet. V'amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Shamati she netushim kishvuyin. Someone who descends upon the property of netushim, then we remove him from the land. And what does netushim mean? If it was his father or his brother or someone that he would inherit, and they went on a trip, but there's no rumor that the person died, they just went away for a long time. And so you're like wondering, oh, where is he? So it doesn't mean that the person is dead. It's probably not. He's probably just away for a while. And therefore, according to Tanakama, if a relative says, oh, well, it's been a long time, I may as well go and manage the property. We do not let him. We kick him off the land. And that is opinion that would parallel Rav. All right, this is similar to someone taken captive, but there's no rumor that he's dead. Here also, he went away for a long trip, but there's no rumor that he's dead. He cannot go onto the land. However, Rashbag says he has a tradition that Netushim has the same law as Shivuyin, and the Shivuyin we saw above is, we say, the relative that goes onto the land can stay there and can benefit from the produce. And so Rashbag follows or is equal to Shmuel, who also says that in a case where there's no rumor that he died, that the relative died, then the son or the brother can go descend on the property and manage it. So this is the case where they are parallel. Now, the Baraita goes on with the third case. Hayored l'nichseh retushim osin hoto miyado. Ve'elu hen nichseh retushim, hare shaya aviv o achiv o echad min hamorishin kan, ve'eno yodeya lehechan halchu. As someone who descends on the property of retushim, meaning forsaken property, then we remove them from it. You cannot stay there. What is the case of retushim? If someone's father or brother or someone that he will inherit is around. He didn't go on a long trip. But we don't know where he went. He hasn't been around to take care of his property for a while. So he may be very well be in town, but he's forsaken his property, forgot about it. So I says, well, I guess he's not taking care of it. You know what? I'll take care of it. I'm his brother. So he starts taking care of it. No, the Bet Din removes him from it. There's no authorization. If an owner of a field wants to leave it fallow, that's his right. You can't go and take it and then and benefit from it. Now the Gemara asks, "May shena hanach dekaru lehu netushim, or may shena haneh dekaru lehu retushim?" How come the second category of the guy who went away for a while is called netushim, but the third category, where he's around but he's forsaking the land on purpose, is called retushim? Netushim de baal kol chandichtiv ashevi tishmetena untashta afkata de malka. Retushim de medata andichtiv em albanim rutasha. We find biblical sources for this usage of these words. Netushim means by force, as it says regarding Shevi'it, the seventh year will come and will force the owner to let it lie fallow. Tishmetena untashta, and he will have to let it lie fallow. That's a decree of the king. In this case, the king of the universe. God says, you can't work the land. He has no choice. He can't work the land. And that's the same as the person that goes away on a trip, and who knows what happened to him? He gets delayed. Against his will, he's not able to come back for a while, and so the land lies fallow against his will. That's why that's called netushim. Retushim comes from this pasuk in Hosea that says a mother and children were forsaken, meaning the father went away. He decided he's going away and not going to take care of his wife and children. So this is when someone does it willingly. It's a choice. And that's why the farmer who's in town, but he just is not taking care of this property, he's forsaking it, that's by choice. And so that accounts for the different terminology. Tana, back to the Braita, it adds, V'chulam shamin lahen ke'aris. All those where we say you can descend onto the land, it doesn't mean that he can keep everything he has, but rather everything he harvests, but rather we appraise if he were a sharecropper. A sharecropper generally gets, let's say, a third. So that's what he gets. He gets one third. Now, ahaya, we ask this last line of the Braita, which of the cases is it talking about? Ilema ashivuyin, if it's the first case of a guy who goes away and we hear rumor that he died, and someone who descends on it can stay there and keep the produce. Hashta zadiz v'niskarava, maida ashbach mi baya, ela adetushim. So if it's going on the first case, but the first case doesn't make sense because there it says, if he hurries up, he hears that his captured relative is coming back, and he quickly harvests as much as he can and consumes as much as he can, so that means he can keep everything. Would you have to tell me, oh, he can keep that which he makes, that which he enhances, like a sharecropper? So it can't be, that's not limiting to his gain to a sharecropper. He can keep whatever he consumes. Rather, is it on the last case of the retushim, or forsaken property? No, but there it says that we don't let him stay there. We kick the relative off the land because the farmer wants it to be forsaken. He's in town, and so no one can benefit from his property. Ela anetushim leman. So it must be talking about the middle case of a guy who goes away on a trip, but there's no rumor that he died. And that's where it's a sharecropper. Now we saw there's a machloket between Rabbanan and Rashbag. So whose opinion? Ilem el Rabbanan ha'amri mosin oto miyado. Rabban Shmuel ben Gamliel ha'amar shamati shanetushim kishvuyin. If we say it's Rabbanan say that we kick him off the land, so he can't get anything from it. And if it's Rashbag, he said, I have a tradition that netushim is the same as shivuyin. And shivuyin, we already said, that he can keep everything that he takes. And that not limited to that of a sharecropper. So the answer is kishvuyin velo shivuyin. Kishvuyin. Den mosin otan miyado velo shivuyin ilu hatam zariz v'niskar v'ilu hacha sheminan le ka'aris. That's why he says, I heard that they are like sharecrop, that it's like shivuyin. Similar to, but not exactly the same. It's similar to shivuyin in that we don't remove the guy from the land, but it's not exactly the same as shivuyin. Because whereas Shivuyin, he can, if he hurries up, he can keep whatever he takes. But in a case where there's no rumor that he died, then according to Rashbag, then he can only keep that what that the amount that a sharecropper would keep. So in the end, this we see that Rashbag is exactly the same as the opinion of Shmuel. Because Shmuel also said that when there's no rumor that the person died, then the heir can go and work the land and take profit like a sharecropper. So you see, Rashbag says the same thing. Rashbag and Shmuel are the same. Rabbanan and Rav are also the same. So in fact, the machloket Amoraim parallels the machloket Tanaim. Now we ask, Umay shena mehaditnan hamosi hosaot al nichse ishto hosi harbe v'achal kima kima v'achal harbe ma sheosi hosi ma sheachal achal. We're going to compare this case of a relative, let's say a father is the relative that goes away, and the son that comes and takes care of it. We just said here that according to Shmuel and Rashbag, it'll be like a sharecropper. How come this is a different outcome than that which we learned in a Mishnah? That if a woman brings in property into the marriage, nichse milog, which means that the husband takes care of it while they're married, and he takes the produce while they're married, and then depending on if she dies first, he inherits. If he dies first, then she gets the land back. And in that case, it says if a husband spent expenditures on the land for this nichse milog that the wife brought in, it doesn't matter whether he spent a lot and it produced and he took only a little bit, or he spent a little bit and he was able to take in a lot. Whatever he spent, whatever he consumed, meaning it's not like a sharecropper. He gets to keep everything. As much as it produces, he can keep. So how come in this case he can keep everything, whereas in the case of a son who goes and descends on the property of the father when the father is away, here the wife is there, but it's as if she's away because she's not taking care of it. Well, during the marriage, he's taking care of it for her. So a son that takes care of that property for the father, we just said that according to Rashbag would be like a sharecropper. But in this case, the husband keeps everything. Rather, Rashbag's opinion is not parallel to this part of the Mishnah, but rather to the following part of the Mishnah, where it says, "Ditnan hamosi osaot anichse ishto ketana ke mosi anichse acher dame." If a husband spends money for the enhancement of the property of his wife who is a minor, we're talking about a case of a girl who lost her father and her mother or brother marry her off. That marriage is conditional. While she's a minor, she can object to it, mi'un, and say, I don't want to be married to this guy. And then the marriage is annulled retroactively as if she was never married. So this guy is always unsure, is this marriage going to last? Or am I going to put money into this and it's all going to be gone? If she annuls the marriage. So in that case, the Mishnah rules that a husband who spends money on his minor wife's property has the same law or similar law to someone who spends money on a stranger's land. If I help out someone whose land is just lying there fallow and I put money into it, I have a right to get my expenditures back. Because I'm doing him a favor, so I get to get something back from it. So these cases are similar. Alma, kevande la samcha date takinu le rabanan ki hechi de la lifsidinu, hachaname takinu le rabanan ki hechi de la lifsidinu. Therefore, in the case of the husband married to the minor, because he doesn't have a reliability, he doesn't rely on his mind that for sure he's going to keep this land for a long time and be able to recoup his expenses, Therefore, the rabbis made a takana so that he shouldn't lose out, and we'll guarantee you that you won't lose out. You'll get an amount like a sharecropper, and that way, the husband, even though the marriage may not last, he won't withhold from putting money into the land, which will be for the benefit of her and him, and the benefit of everybody. And he'll at least get the amount of a sharecropper. That is the parallel to Rashbag's opinion. This part of the Mishnah, this is that those cases are similar. And Hachanameh, and so here too, in the case of Rashbag, when the person goes away, and there's no rumor that he's dead, so the rabbis made a takana that the heir who goes and takes care of the land, he should put money into the land and not worry that he's going to lose out everything that he put into the land. And so he also gets the amount of a sharecropper or someone who helps out a stranger by putting money into their land should not lose out the expenditure that they put into it. V'chulan shamin lahen kadis. Now the Braita had at the end and said, in all cases we appraise them as a sharecropper. Now we just applied that to the opinion of Rashbag in the middle case. But why does it say v'chulan? In all cases, that only applies to one case. V'chulan le'atu yemai. So what is the word v'chulan coming to include? What other case is it coming to include that's similar to the one that the case of Rashbag? Rav Nachman said in the name of Shemuel that if someone is taken captive against his will, then we bring an heir to come and manage his property, and they'll get paid like a sharecropper. But if the person went away in their own free will, then we do not. So because this is an adult, he decided to go away, he didn't appoint anybody in the meantime, so then leave it alone. Rav Nachman himself, that's what Rav Nachman said in the name of Shemuel. Rav Nachman himself added an extra point. If someone is running away from authorities, then that's the same as being taken captive. You don't say, well, oh, you ran away from your own free will. Yeah, he ran away, but he's running away from danger. Now, what danger is he running away from? If it's he wants to get away of taxes, well, that's of his own volition. I mean, you have to pay taxes. If you're running away because you don't want to pay taxes, you decided that you'd rather be somewhere else rather than pay the taxes. So that's not being forced to run away. Rather, he's running away because he's being accused of being a murderer. And so the authorities are looking for him, and he has no choice. He's got to run away. So someone who runs away because they committed a crime or are accused of committing a crime, that person is the same as someone taken captive. And therefore, the same law would apply. If they ran away because of that such danger, then we bring an heir to take care of the land. And so that's an added point that this word v'chulan is coming to hint to, that not only someone who is taken captive, but also someone who runs away is like someone who's taken captive. Amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel, Shavoy shenishba v'hiniach kama liksor, anavim lipsor, temarim ligdor, zetim limsok, betin yodin l'chasav ma'amidin apotropos, v'koser boser, v'goder mosek, v'achar kach moridin karov l'chasav, v'lokim apotropo le'olam, apotropa le'diknane la'mukminan. So Shmuel has another law. Now we mentioned one law by Shmuel. If someone is taken captive and he left his field with standing grain ready to be reaped, or grapes ready to be harvested, or dates ready to be, or olives ready to be picked, so we don't want to let them go. If you leave them out in the field, they'll go bad. So the Bet Din will descend on his field, meaning manage the property, and appoint a representative, a steward, who will go and harvest that grain, or those grapes, or olives, or dates. And afterwards, that's like an emergency, we have to do that right away. And after that harvest season, then we get the closest relative who will be an heir and will to manage the property after that. That's the statement of Shmuel. The Gemara asks, why don't we appoint a steward forever? Why bother with the heir? Who would he, you know, is he going to take care of it? Is he going to take too much, too little? So why not just use a steward? And the answer is, it's difficult to find a steward for a bearded person, meaning for an adult. If it's a child orphan, then that's a great mitzvah, and everybody wants to try to help out a child orphan. They can't help themselves, so it's easy to find a steward that will help out. But the stewardship is a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of work, and you don't get anything back yourself. So to find a steward to take care of property of an adult that something happened to and is not around for some reason, he's taken captive, but nevertheless, he's an adult, so that's not as big. It's still a mitzvah, but it's not as big as a mitzvah as taking care of an orphan, and therefore, since it's hard to find a steward for such a thing, it makes more sense to ask a relative to come and take care of it. Of Huna, En Muridin Katan, Lenixe Shavoy, Velo Karov Lenixe Katan, Velo Karov Mechamat Karov Lenixe Katan. Rav Huna teaches that we do not allow a minor relative to take care of property of someone who is taken captive, and we do not bring a relative to take care of the property of a minor, and nor do we have a relative that's a relative of a relative take care of the property of a minor. We're going to explain each one of these. We do not allow a minor to take care of, let's say, his father who got taken captive. A minor cannot go and manage the land because he doesn't know what he's doing, and he may devalue the property. This is actually the third case here. We're explaining it second. A relative of a relative, we say, is talking about a maternal brother. In other words, you have a father who's taken captive, and now there's one brother who's a minor. We don't let and let's say that minor brother has a half paternal half brother, and that paternal half brother has a maternal half brother. So the two extreme brothers are not related to each other. They're each there's a brother in the middle who is a half brother from the father with one, and half brother from his mother from the other. And so the brother who inherits the land but is a minor, we do not allow his half-brother's half-brother to manage the land, because we're worried that that half-brother half-brother will say, oh, you know what? My half-brother inherited the land, and now he gave it to me. And so he'll make a false claim. It's a possible line to get there, and therefore we don't allow. We're talking about a case where we're not sure what the father said, how he left his property. He's taken captive, and he didn't leave any directive about what to do. And so we don't know. Maybe in fact he gave the property to the minor brother. Maybe not. Maybe he gave it to the adult brother, and then maybe the adult brother gave it to his half brother. And so we don't allow even a relative of a relative to take care of it, lest the minor lose out. And similarly, we don't bring any relative to take care of the property of a minor, because the minor will not know to protest. And then the adult relative will just keep it for himself. Oh, they no one ever protested. And then after a while goes by, then the adult will just take it and the minor will not know. If you give it to someone who's not related, then eventually, all right, the minor will grow up. He'll say, you're not related. You could not have possibly even have gotten this through inheritance. So it's obviously it's mine, and he'll be able to get it back. Amar Rava, Shema Mina Mine Mid Rav Huna and Machazikin Ben Nichse Katan. Rava says, I can learn from Rav Huna that we do not make assume a chazaka. Chazaka is if I'm on a piece of land for 3 years and nobody protests, then that's proof that it's mine. As long as I say, I was given to me as a present, or I bought it, whatever. I don't need, as long as I have a claim, the chazaka serves as proof. So Rava says, since we said that only a relative cannot be a custodian for a minor, but someone else can, right? A custodian can, who's not related, can, or someone else. Therefore, we see that we do not count it as a chazakah. If it was that 3 years, let's say the kid is 6 years old, and so now the person who manages, the manager, is going to be there for more than 3 years, for many years, seven, 8 years. He's going to be there. And if you say that there is a chazakah for the property of a minor, then we can't let anybody manage the property, because anyone who's there for more than 3 years, then we suspect will claim ownership. Therefore, Rava says, we see, we only worry about a relative being a manager, but if it's non-relative being the manager, then we don't worry, because no one can claim a chazaka if it's a minor's property, right? If the guy says, I was here for 3 years, mine. Well, no, but this is a minor. It belonged to a minor. And therefore, the minor doesn't have an ability to protest. And therefore, your living there is not counted as a chazaka. Vafilu higdil. And even after the minor became an adult, he still might not be aware immediately that this is his land. He might find out only later on when someone tells him or he goes through some papers and realizes. So as long as the custodian, manager, started taking care of it while he was a minor, he cannot claim chazakah even after the minor grows up. Furthermore, now we're going to limit that halacha that we said in the name of Rav Huna. That is only true in the paternal brothers. But if the minor has a maternal brother, then we allow that maternal brother or their relatives to come and be the manager, because there's no way that the maternal brother is the one that inherited, because a child, the father, if and when he dies, so his son will take over. And if it's just a maternal brother, well, then that's not the same father. So surely it belongs to this kid and not to the maternal brother. Even if it's paternal brothers, we only say that a paternal brother cannot be the custodian if it's regarding land, because we're afraid that the adult paternal brother will claim the land. But if it's a house, then there's no problem, because there's neighbors, and neighbors will say, oh, we know that this house belongs to this brother, and he's the rightful guy, and this older brother just was taking care of it in the meantime. Since there's neighbors, they will know. And even regarding land, we only say that a paternal brother and the paternal brother's relatives cannot be custodians when there is no document of division that the father left. But if there is a document of division that the father drafted and said, this my minor son is going to get this land, then there's publicity, right? Because once something is drawn up as a document, a scribe knows, people know about it, and then when the minor grows up, he'll be able to reclaim his land. Now, even though we just said all that, a secondary layer of the Gemara goes back and says, "Velahi, that's not true. Lashina chede aba, lashina chede ima, lashina ra'ata, lashina bate, lashina abid itda, lashina la abid itda, la machtina." And actually, it makes no difference whether it's the paternal brother or the maternal brother, whether it's land or it's a house, whether the father made a draft document of division or not. In any case, we do not let a relative manage the property of a minor. It has to be a non-relative, and that way that non-relative custodian will take care of the land while the kid's a minor, and then eventually when the kid grows up and realizes this is his property, he will be able to reclaim his property and there will be no contestation. We're now going to apply the principles that we just learned from Rav Huna to a very interesting and slightly complicated case. Hahi sabta davya la telat benata. Nowadays, sabta means a grandmother, but here it just means an older woman who has three daughters. Ishtabai'i vechada berata. She was taken captive along with one of the daughters. Idach tarte benata shechiba chada minayhu ushbaka yinuka. Of the two remaining daughters, one of them died but left a minor boy. So we got all three. One daughter is taken captive along with her mother. One daughter is an adult, regular, she's around. And one daughter died, leaving a minor son. So what are we going to do with the property of the mother? The mother has some property. Who is going to take care of it while she is in captivity? Amar Abaye, hechi navid, lok min hu l'nichse bida de'achta, dilma shechiba sabta, ve'en moridin karov l'nichse katan. So should we give all of the property to the adult daughter? That's a problem, because what if the grandmother actually died? If she died, then the children will all inherit. the daughters. Since one daughter died, that share of the inheritance goes to the minor boy. Now that minor boy, someone has to take care of his property, and we just learned the principle that you cannot give a relative the right to manage the property of a minor. So just in case the mother died, we cannot give the share of the minor boy to his, it would be the boy's aunt, who is a relative. So we can't give everything to the adult daughter. Nokminu l'nichse bida dinuka, d'yama l'ashechi basabtav, en moridin katan l'nichse shavui. So should we let the minor boy take care of all the property? No, because maybe the boy's grandmother, the daughter's mother, is alive. And we have a principle that we do not bring a minor to manage the property of someone taken captive, right? If she's alive, it's not an inheritance. It's only taking care of it until, hopefully, this person is freed. So now we're stuck. What are we going to do? Obviously, the captive daughter can't take care of it. She's captive herself. Amar Abaye, Hilkach Palgaya Vina Lalachta, Vidach Palga Mokminan Le Apotropo Linuka. There's what we do. We give to the sister, who's the adult sister, and half of it we give to the minor, but we appoint a steward on behalf of the minor. So then there's no problem. If the mother has died, so now this is their inheritance that they're taking. So good, they're allowed to get their inheritance. Let's say the other captive daughter also died. So they're taking their inheritance, and for a minor, you appoint a steward to take care of it. And if the mother is alive, well, then it's okay because the minor has a steward who's taking care of that half of it. So there's a steward there, and the other sister is taking care of the mother's property but not the minor's property, because she has her own. So that's a good solution. However, Rava says, since in any case you're going to appoint a steward for the minor, for the half that you're giving him, you know what? You may as well appoint a steward for the other half of the property anyway, and not give it to the adult sister. Let a steward control the whole thing, because otherwise it's too complicated to split it up. In the end, sadly, the mother died. But we don't know what happened to the sister who was taken captive. That's still unknown. So Baye says, now, remember there were three daughters, so each one is going to inherit a third. So we take a third, we give it to the adult daughter who's around. We take the other third, and the one daughter died, so that goes to the grandson. He gets a third. And then the last third that belongs to the captive daughter, but we don't know what happened to her, so we'll split that in two. And so we'll give a sixth of the entire inheritance to the adult daughter, and we can't give it directly to the minor, because the minor can't manage property in case that sister is alive, and therefore we appoint a steward to take care of that six. If the captive daughter has died, then that share will be split among them anyway. So whether she's alive or dead, this is a good solution. Rava Amar Migo Demokim Apotropali Danka Mokmina Name Apotropali Idach Danka. Rava, however, says, since in any case you're appointing a steward for the sixth of the minor, so you know what? Let that steward also take care of the other sixth, that way there won't be any confusion. We lastly have yet another fascinating story. Marie bar Isaac atale acha mi bechozai amale pelogli amale layadana lach. Marie bar Isaac was a very rich and powerful man, and he had a lot of property. And one day, his brother came from Bechozai. He didn't know he had a brother. And the brother says, oh, dad died some time ago, and I'm your brother. I want half of the land as my inheritance. And Marie Bar Isaac says, I don't know who you are. I've never seen you before. So they come to judgment. Ata lekamed Rav Chista. Rav Chista is going to be the judge. Amar le Shapir kamalach shenema vayaked Yosef et echav vehem lo hikiruhu. Melemet sheyasah belo chatimat zakan ubaba chatimat zakan. And Rav Chista tells the brother that came from a foreign land, and he said, Mari Bar Isaac has the right here, and he doesn't have to give you property, and he's not lying when he says he doesn't recognize you. It could very well be he doesn't recognize you because it's been a long time. Look at the example of Yosef and his brothers, that they sold him when he was young, and then many, many years later, when the brothers came to get food, right? Yosef recognized the brothers, but they did not recognize him. How could they not recognize their own brother? Because when he left, he had no beard, and now he had a beard, so he looked different. And so too, listen, Mari Bar Isaac says he doesn't know who you are. I trust that he really doesn't know who you are. And if in fact you're his brother, you have to bring proof. So go bring proof that you are his brother, and then you can take half the land. You can't just show up and say, I'm his brother, and take half the land. Who says? And the brother, this younger brother, comes and says, listen, I have witnesses, but they're afraid to testify because Mari Bar Isaac is a very powerful person. He's violent, and all the witnesses are intimidated. So Rav Chista turns to Mari Bar Isaac and says, listen, he says he has witnesses, but you're a violent man, they're scared. So therefore, you, Mari Bar Isaac, bring proof that this kid is not your brother. Amale dina hachi, Mari Bar Isaac says, that halacha, hamosim havera lavaraya. He wants to extract money from me, and so he should bring proof that he is my younger brother. I don't have to prove it. That he is not my brother. Rav Chista says, well, that's the judgment for you and all those who are violent like you. Because you're violent and people are intimidated, so you bring this upon yourself. You shouldn't be such a scary person. And then the normal law would apply. But if you're going to be so intimidating, then you know what? The burden of proof is on you to prove that you are that this is not your brother. So Mari Bar Isaac says, well, in the end, if I'm so scary, then I'll bring proof, I'll bring witnesses, and they won't testify in his favor, they'll testify in my favor, and they may lie. So how could you trust witnesses, even if I bring witnesses, and they say that this is not my brother, how would you trust them? Maybe I'm intimidating them. Rav Chista says, witnesses, even if they're not totally truthful and do the wrong thing, they're not going to do two wrongs. In other words, witnesses that know that they are brothers may withhold testimony because they're scared, witnesses will not testify falsely that he is not your brother when they know that you are, right? So you're not going to be able to take witnesses that know your brothers and not only not testify, that they'll do, they'll stay away. But to make them lie and say that you're not brothers when they know that you are brothers, that to that extent, even your intimidation and violence is not going to make people lie. So therefore, you bring a testimony that this is not your brother, and then you won't have to pay. Otherwise, you have to pay. In the end, the brother was able to bring witnesses. They got courage and they testified. Yes, this is they are brothers. Amar le liflog li name mi pardese ubustane de shatal. Now this younger brother says to Mari Bar Isaac, I want also the orchards and the gardens that you planted since the father died. You put in money into the land and enhanced it. And I want that also because you planted this on my half of the land, so I want to benefit from it. Rav Chista said, the younger brother here has a point, because the Mishnah teaches that if a father died, leaving adult children and minor children, and the adult children invest in the land and enhance it and make it better, then eventually when the minor sons grow up, they split the difference. And so the money that the adult children put into the land, the minors do take half of it. They get benefit from it. And so therefore, this brother who was a minor, it seems that he was a minor when their father died, and now he grew up, and how he came to find you and claim his inheritance, so he deserves to get half of everything that you invested in. So Rabbah also said, right, the prophet goes down the middle. But Abaye said, no, this case is different. In a normal case, where the brothers all know about each other, the adult brothers know that the minor brothers are going to take half, and they forego payment. They're happy to help their little brothers. Listen, we're putting investment into it, and when my younger brother grows up, he'll take half of it, but it's okay, I'm okay with it, right? Dad would be happy, I'm happy to help my younger brother. And therefore, the kid gets it. But here, Bar Isaac didn't even know that he had a younger brother, and so therefore when he invested, he did not forego that payment that it should go to the younger brother. So he should not have to give the value of the enhanced land, or even half of it, to the younger brother. So now we're stuck. They didn't know what to do. And so the matter continued to be judged and went up the ladder till it got to be Ameh. Amar lehu gedola mizo amru shamin lahem ke'aris. Hashta adide laya havinan leh. He sided with Mari bar Isaac because he says we find it even bigger chidush in a case where, let's say, a father gets taken captive and the adult son manages it in the meantime, and then the father comes back. So whatever money the adult son put into it and managing it, he can take, he can reap profit like a sharecropper. So in other words, he does get his expenditures back and he does take some of the profit. So here also, we should say Mari bar Isaac was taking care of this land for this, his minor brother, and whatever he put into it, he deserves to get back. And so, while yes, he has to give half the land to his younger brother, but the younger brother has to pay him back for the expenditures and enhancement of the land. So he sides with the older brother. So then this judgment went back to Rav Chista. Rav Chista did not agree with Rabbi Ameh's opinion. He says, no, the cases are different. In the case that he quoted here, someone who went captive, that in that case the heir manages the property with permission, right? He has permission because the father was taken captive, the son has permission, and therefore gets to collect his expenditures back. But here Bar Isaac did not have permission to take his younger brother's inheritance, and furthermore the younger brother was a minor, and we have a rule that we do not appoint a relative to take care of the property of a minor, because we're afraid that he's going to claim it for himself. Instead, we appoint a non-related steward. And you see that fear happens exactly over here. Mari bar Isaac now is trying to claim the entire property for himself. And anyway, so now, okay, fine, he proved that he's a brother, so he gets half, but you should not apply the same law regarding an heir that takes care of the father's property who's taken captive. He goes there and manages it with permission, and therefore he can collect the expenditures that he puts into it. But here, Mari bar Isaac had no right to manage the property on behalf of his minor brother, and therefore he does not collect what he put into it, and instead the nice orchards as they are go to the younger brother, and the younger brother does not have to pay for the enhancement. So they went back to the Biameh. Says, listen, this is what Rav Chista said. He said the cases are different. And the Biameh said, oh, they never told me that Mari's brother was a minor when he inherited. I didn't know that. If I knew that, then I would agree with Rav Chista. I do agree with Rav Chista. Now that I know that he's a minor, I only thought they were comparable because I thought he was an adult the whole time. Very interesting cases. Baruch Adonai L'olam. Amen v'amen.